HubZero.org, a platform for scientific collaboration.
Good afternoon. I'm Lynn Zettner. I'm the Technical Director for the Network for Computational Nanotechnology. We manage the NanoHub site, which is, as was mentioned this morning, the oldest of the hubs. My talk today is about success criteria for a science gateway or a hub site. We've been in business for a long time, so we've learned a lot of lessons as we've gone through the process with NanoHub. First, just a few fast facts about NanoHub. It is, as was mentioned this morning by Gerhard Klimek, the world's largest nanotechnology user facility. We're now seeing about 170,000 users annually worldwide. We host a collection of about 2,300 resources. Just under 200 of those are simulation tools. The rest of it is what we call our and more content, which is going to be full courses, presentations, podcasts, downloadable material, animation, teaching materials, etc. So a vast collection of resources available on NanoHub. I believe you've seen this slide before in a couple of presentations this morning. This is our cumulative worldwide usage. Again, the yellow dots are representing actual simulations, whereas the red dots are people accessing our and more content. We have activity across six continents. We haven't yet been able to send somebody to Antarctica yet. So what's the vision for a science gateway site or a successful science gateway site? It starts with fundamental science and engineering. The next step in the process is to use that fundamental science and engineering to drive basic research, basically the invention stage of the research process. These first two arrows are basically what happens fairly easily in the academic community. Academics will take their basic science engineering through the basic research. But the next step in the process then is to use that basic research to facilitate applied research, product development, innovation, and eventually impact. Looks beautiful up there, all lined up step by step. Actually, it's not such an easy process, and the step from the basic research to the applied research is where people start to trip up. It's not an easy transition, particularly for academics to say, okay, I've got this great research, I've got this great code, what do I do with it now? So the goal for a science gateway is to kind of help with that transition and to guide people through that process into the applied research and get it out there and disseminate it. When it all works together, it's a beautiful thing. We collect together the developers, the people doing that fundamental research, pull them together with users in a nice cyber infrastructure system, and we end up with a vibrant and impactful virtual organization. So what are the seven criteria that we've learned from the application of NanoHub for a successful science gateway? It all starts with outstanding science. It's all that basic research, again, that needs to get out there on the hub, on the science gateway, and disseminated out into the greater community. So we're looking to provide what the world wants. The world, in this case, is our research community, and a fairly broad research community if you want to see a good impact from a hub or a science gateway. As Gerhard mentioned in his presentation, 190 tools, almost 200 tools on NanoHub. We didn't develop them all. It's been a huge resource in funding, people, nothing that our project could have supported on its own. So for a science gateway to really be productive, to really get the volume of content out there that you see on a site like NanoHub, you have to have some leverage research, okay? And at NCN, we've got an interesting model. We're comprised actually of seven related sites at different universities, Purdue being the lead site. And each of those sites has a different research focus, so it helps us address the needs of a fairly broad nanotechnology community. We've got Purdue, which focuses on nanoelectronics. We've got focus on nanophotonics, nanobio, nanomechanics. So trying to cover a broad range of topics through this leverage research such that we're not paying for this research out of the budget for our science gateway. Another way to provide this outstanding science is to create partnerships with industry, which NCN has pursued. Second step or criterion in the process is to have a commitment for dissemination from the people creating this research. And generally, we're talking about faculty members. They can be a little protective sometimes of their research, and you've got to convince them that they want to give away this research for free. So you need to find a way to create some buy-in from the faculty community. Again, the NCN model is a nice way we found to lead this process. We've got our 7 sites. Engaged with the 7 sites is a total of about 44 faculty members across all the sites, plus 7 site leads, and I'll talk a little bit more about the function of the site leads later in my talk, and almost 200 students at the graduate, undergraduate, summer students, and at the postdoc level, working together on a lot of these associated projects, the projects we're using for our leveraged research, in order to lead by example. So NCN leads the charge. We develop an awful lot of content, and from there, kind of start pulling the wave in with us. You still may have some people asking, what's the payoff? What's in it for me? And those stubborn faculty members, you're still working hard to convince. So we've got a couple of examples. Again, you've seen these in Gerhard's talk this morning, but I'm going to elaborate on them a little bit more. Dragica Vasileska out of Arizona State, one of our top contributors, currently has 16 tools on the NanoHub. My stats are more up to date than his. She now has this year over 10,000 users and 115 citations to the tools she's helped develop. If we look at tool usage, somebody is basically using research you develop, so you can think of it as if somebody reading a research paper that you've done, presenting your research, although they're actually, by using a tool, almost getting their hands into your research a little bit. But if you think about it that way, these usage statistics are telling Dragica that she has over 10,000 people essentially reading or following her research, utilizing her research. That's a huge proof of impact. And when you go to write a proposal, NSF, looking for that concrete evidence of impact, you've just got this beautiful usage set of data here to prove that. Sheikh Ahmed, again, we call him a next generation faculty member because he's sort of come through the whole process. There was really no having to bring him on board. He understood it from a postdoc. Left Purdue, went to Southern Illinois University as a faculty member, and immediately jumped right in, utilizing his NanoHub experience to start working on further implementing NanoHub resources at SIU. Again, he has an extremely nice rise in his usage statistics cumulatively. 14 tools, I think at the end of 2010, it was more like 8 tools. So Sheikh Ahmed continues to be very actively involved with development on NanoHub, and almost 8,000 users for his tools. And as Gerhard mentioned, again, these very quantitative statistics can be valuable. It was able to allow Sheikh Ahmed to apply for and receive early tenure promotion. The third element or criterion we would consider for a successful Science Gateway site is to understand your users. And this can fall to the side kind of easily with a cyber infrastructure. We're so involved with the content. We're so concerned with the cyber infrastructure itself. Oh, users, what users? They'll figure it out on their own. You've got to be very aware as you build this, as you manage this, who your users are, what their experience levels are, and what their needs are. And with the Hub platform, the Hub Zero platform, we have a unique thing to offer the users in that a lot of research software requires somebody to install it somewhere. The problem is they may not have access, they may not have the proper experience, they may just not have the time to mess with it. So the fact that through a hub we can offer that access directly through the browser, no messing around with installation, no messing around with updates to software, it's all right there at your fingertips, is of tremendous value to our users. We have to understand what their experience levels are, what their time constraints are, and make sure that whatever we're doing doesn't impose undue startup costs to them, or we're going to lose those users. Okay? when you go on business trip, you go to the airport, you get in a rental car, you just go. You don't have to sit down for 3 hours and read a manual. Okay, if we did, nobody would go anywhere. So our tools have to be kind of like those rental cars. Jump in, try it out, fairly intuitive. You can kind of figure out, yeah, oh, the turn signal's a little different over here, but I basically know how things operate. Likewise, you know, we need to get people using these tools without that big time constraint. Otherwise, they're going to walk away. Another component in understanding our users is to understand that they're going to want to jump in, have that immediate access, and some instant feedback. One of the things with the instant feedback is once users come into the tools, a nice thing that the tools on the hubs can have is that they're set up to just hit simulate. So if I want to come in, play with a tool, just hit simulate, I can kind of see and start building that intuitive feel for what it does. And I start to get some feedback right away through the GUI, through the results that are graphically presented to me, and start to understand how the tool works. An issue to be aware of in understanding our users is that they get really cranky if things don't seem to be happening. So if you've got a tool that's running for an extensive amount of time and there's no message to the users, you're going to get complaints about it. The one complaint that you get, there's 10, 20, 30 people behind that guy who just gave up and left. So you have to be aware of keeping the users apprised of what's going on as they use the tools, making things as transparent as you can while keeping them informed. So any kind of accessing to high-power computing resources, et cetera, needs to happen fairly seamlessly in the user experience. And the last thing that users are going to need and that they benefit from in the hub environment is this idea that they can visualize the results. Rather than just getting these huge output sets of data, they get that beautiful graphical output that's very easy to look at, to start to understand. And that ability to start rerunning and comparing results, doing what-if analysis, is very valuable to the type of users you'll have in a science gateway. The technology obviously is going to play a big part in how well the Science Gateway or the hub performs and meets the needs of the users. The first step, I've grouped these two together because they're kind of related. The technology for dissemination is essentially your underlying hub architecture. So for us, it's the Hub Zero platform. It has to be simple to use. Again, hop in and drive it. And it's got to be utterly dependable. Okay, if your users start to count on it, you've got 170,000 users annually, your hub goes down and there's going to be a lot of screaming. Okay, NanoHub, as an example, last year had a 99.6% uptime. We keep track of every downtime incident and evaluate on an ongoing basis what's going on with those, and tracking those, and always, of course, striving to make those digits at the end go up. This doesn't come for free. You can't set up a hub and forget about it. Funds need to be dedicated to the operation such that we can keep this dependable operation for our users. The second side of the technology equation is actually the people side. So we've got our underlying infrastructure, but we've got this whole tech transfer process involved in content deployment. Again, at NCN, we've developed a model that works fairly well. At each of our associated sites, we have generally, in most cases, a faculty site lead and a technical site lead. The faculty site lead is sort of the liaison or the face of that site. They interact, try to expand the presence of NanoHub at their particular university site, as well as work to recruit other faculty members to help them understand the benefit of NanoHub as a place for them to publish and deploy content. The other half of the team then is that technical site lead. They tend to be the one who does a lot of the hand-holding. I'm a faculty member. I've got some Fortran code. Isn't this nifty? I would really like to share this. What do I do? So that the technical site leads can sometimes bring the people through that big gap and kind of tighten it up and help us move from that basic research to the applied and disseminated research. The next criterion for our successful Science Gateway is our data, our usage data, our assessment process. Very important to NSF, you know, how we're doing. first step in the process is to gather that data, to study it, to disseminate it, to have an open policy for providing that data to the user community and the public at large. And a couple of the areas that we would look at, access, and that can be, again, examining and updating our uptime statistics, keeping aware of those, but also our broader access across the world. We track our usage. You can see from the map that much of our usage now is outside the United States. We look at usage across the United States in underserved communities, minority-serving institutes, community colleges, et cetera, in order for us to start thinking about what kind of impact we're making. Are we reaching one of our goals, that is to bring resources that used to be available only to an elite small group out to a greater community that can make use of what were once restricted to only universities or institutions that had the infrastructure to support them. Usage data on NanoHub, you'll find an awful lot of it, and it's a lot more in-depth than just looking at web hits. On NanoHub, we see 5 to 6 million web hits per month, but you saw our numbers, about 170,000 annual users. So we're very careful to look at our statistics in order to determine unique users. And we're fairly conservative with that, trying not to duplicate users. We'd rather miss users than double count people. So we look at our usage data very carefully in that way. Usage, access certainly show impact. Another way to show impact is, how are we disseminating the science? And one of the ways we look at that is by an ongoing process of searching for citations. NanoHub has now, at this point in time, found about 719 citations in the scientific literature to NanoHub. And we look at that fairly carefully. Each paper is evaluated by several members of a team to determine its validity as a citation to NanoHub, what kind of citation it is, whether it's a research citation, an education citation, or just a general cyber infrastructure reference to NanoHub. And we go even deeper than that to look at where the authors came from, what their affiliations are, and look at whether or not the authors are presenting experimental data in those papers, whether the authors appear to be experimentalists using NanoHub in their experimental research, et cetera. So a vast amount of data comes into us as we look at those citations, and we continue to look at it in different ways to see what it's telling us about our impact. Once you find those citations, as Gerhard mentioned, it's a good science. Yeah, sure, people are talking about NanoHub, you know, what are they saying? You know, is it really good science? And the secondary citations bear out to us that, yeah, a lot of people value these initial primary papers because they're being cited again. Our 719 papers have been cited in the literature about 4,000 times. On average, that's about 5.5 citations per paper, but it's fairly top-loaded. So we have a lot of papers at the one end with a lot of secondary citations, and then some of the newer papers haven't been cited very much or at all yet. So we track that. In the assessment process, then, we can use all this data that we're gathering to, again, as I showed you in the slides with the faculty members, to incentivize our contributors, the people we want to come publish on NanoHub, are good examples of Vasileska and Ahmed that I showed previously. The end result of all this assessment is we want to know, are we meeting our goal? Have we met that goal for a Science Gateway site to transition from science and engineering through to the invention stage into innovation and applied research, disseminating out that research that happens in the ivory towers out into a broader community. And then the very last criteria for a successful science gateway, and one that can be a struggle, is this idea of a business model. Okay, what's the next step in the process? You've got a fairly well-thriving hub or a science gateway site. How do you maintain it? How do you sustain it? It can't be static. You need to continue to provide additional content, new cutting-edge research available on your hub. And you're going to do that, again, with that leveraged research, the associated projects, through a sustained academic funding program. And then the ongoing maintenance or sustainability of the hub itself. There's another step here where we start to think about product development, real business plans to develop and take our hubs into the next step. If we have a science gateway or a hub that has success at all seven of these criteria, I think we'll see that we do have a thriving and vibrant site, and that's our model for Science 2.0. Thank you.
Do I have questions for Lynn? No?
That was easy.
Oh, sorry. Just a second.
Talk about the commercial support. Sorry. What companies are interested in helping, working with Nano?
That's a step that we're working on.
Do you repeat the question, please? Right, sorry.
He asked about commercial support and what companies are working with NanoHub. That's sort of a step that we're in our infancy with. We've worked quite extensively with Intel. They've supported some associated research with us. And we're just starting to move to a model where we work with companies on a membership basis. And we're just getting into to that phase. So we're just starting to talk to companies about that. Other questions?
Okay.
What percentage of all users are actually people that would cite and ultimately also create new publications that then cite NanoHub? And what is the percentage which use it in classroom settings, use it outside of the scholarly academy?
The percentage of contributors with regard to the whole usage community is fairly small. Off the top of my head, I think our contributors' numbers are about 700 versus that broad base of users. So we have a lot of content coming from a fairly small group. We're just starting to track usage in classrooms. We do it manually. Gerhard mentioned in his presentation we have an assessment person who sees how many courses, basically through information that the users self-provide. And we also have a group that's working on analyzing the usage data automatically to provide us that information. We're looking usually at between 100 and 150 classrooms per year across the United States and the world using NanoHub in the classroom.
I can add a little bit. The numbers I have on top of my head is 8,600 people in the academic year 09-10 were running simulations. About 2,500 of them behave like classroom people, where you can figure out by their behavior, they come in as a group, they behave as a group. So that's formalized training. So that's about, call it a third or so formalized training. About 100 of those we could identify as NanoHub authors over the years. And they have a certain pattern of usage, and that pattern is similar to self-study users. So that distinction between research and self-study is harder to do unless you look at what particular tools are being run. So, if you want to know more, I think Michael's going to talk more about that, or we can sit down and I'll tell you more.